He looks determined without being ruthless. Something heroic in his manner. There's a courage about him. Doesn't look like a killer. Comes across so calm. Acts like he has a dream. Full of passion.
You don't trust me, huh?
Well, you know why.
I do. We're not supposed to trust anyone in our profession anyway.
Peace, 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 and welcome to The Rematch, which is part of the BasketballNews.com podcast network. On The Rematch, you'll hear in-depth interviews with notable names from all walks of life. Because sometimes the media just doesn't get it right. The Rematch is that second opportunity to clarify, put things in proper context, correct fake news or misreported controversy. The media still exists as the most powerful entity on earth because they control the minds of the masses. I'm Matan Thomas, and the full truth is what we are aiming to catch. Many media stories omit details that would dilute their clickbait roar, and that's why there's a need for The Rematch. On this episode, I spoke with Howard University's men's head basketball coach, Kenneth Blakeney. We discuss his style of coaching and where he wants to take the program. In the wake of allegations against Wichita State's head coach, Greg Marshall, we also expressed our disdain for abusive college head coaches, in particular, white college head coaches dealing with black players. This was a great discussion. Hope you enjoy.
Coach Kenny Blakeney, how are you doing, sir?
What's up, Eton? What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm blessed. Thanks for taking the time to come on The Rematch on BasketballNews.com. You know, first of all, I have to ask you, how's your family, your health, you know, Howard University players? That's the first question you have to ask now in these COVID times. So how's everybody's health?
No, I appreciate you asking, man. Everyone's well. You know, family's together. We've kind of been in our own little bubble. Making sure we take care of one another. And our players have been back for about 6 weeks now, and they're doing well, man. Everything's been great on their end. They're being very, I think, diligent with quarantining and responsible with, you know, staying away from others and just kind of focusing on the things that are important to them right now, and that's their school and basketball. I told them the other thing they can throw in there is their PlayStation game, man, or whatever these guys play these days.
Right. And what is the testing process that you have? Because that's the story with all, because everybody, you know, I thought that everybody was on the same program, the same, like one universal program for all schools, all, you know, I guess that makes too much sense. But what is the program that Howard has?
Well, that's a great question. I just got back from getting my test. We are currently on a 3-day-a-week testing schedule. Okay. And I think, you know, the test that we're doing is the nasal swab test right now, which percentage-wise is the most accurate test. So we're taking it very serious. And our president, Dr. Wayne Frederick, and our athletic director, Mr. Kerry Davis, have done a lot for us to get to this point where we are giving ourselves the best chance to compete this year.
That's great to hear, because you always want to be able to keep the players and the athletes safe. And, you know, we see what's happening in the NFL. We see the catastrophes happening in baseball. And, you know, we just want to be able to keep them safe. All right. So I want to talk about you. I want to go back a little bit. You're a native Washingtonian, grew up right here in D.C., and you played ball for the Boys and Girls Club when you were younger. Yeah. You know, when did you fall in love with basketball?
That's a funny story. I started playing organized basketball when I was 8. And I think my first year, I just kind of played just watching my older brothers and cousins play. But the next year at the age of 9, we were playing in a game against, I think, number 10 Boys and Girls Club, which was located on 14th Street and ran at that point in time by Mr. Ed Hill, who was a longtime sports information director at Howard University. And it was a sudden death overtime game. I caught the ball in the corner, and I had my back turned to the basket. I just turned around and threw it, not knowing what I was doing, and the ball went in.
Okay.
It was the shot that won the game.
Ah.
So I didn't realize at the time, everybody came over and was jumping up and down on me and like celebrating. I was this 9-year-old kid that has never made a basket in a game that was like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that was the turn that was the thing that really, I think, made me love basketball and also love the process. As you know, Ethan, it's a journey and it's a process and it's a grind.
Right.
And from that point on, I literally just would go to the court every day and shoot layups and learn to make layups and learn to dribble. And, you know, from layups, I would just pull up for a 3-foot shot.
Okay.
From a full court, right hand all the way down, shoot the shot, go left hand all the way down, shoot the shot. And,
right.
And I would pull up from a 7-footer. So it was just a process of understanding and learning the fundamentals at that point in time.
Got you. Now, did you see the documentary Basketball County, In the Water?
I am guilty. I did not.
Oh, you didn't see it. You got to watch it. It was produced by Kevin Durant, showcased Prince George's County, current players like Victor Oladipo and Michael Beasley and Quinn Cook and Markel Fultz and Jeremy Grant. It just showed the whole history of the county. But you lived it, though. So even though you haven't seen it, you know, you've been busy, but you've actually lived it. And, you know, one of the things that it told was the history of Prince George's County. And as a, you know, Washingtonian, you're aware of that history and you're aware of that culture. So what does that mean for you in that sense to then be a part of that history, being part of Howard University?
Well, it's truly, I think, unique to probably have a perspective on it that goes back maybe 40 years, to be honest with you. And we're talking about when D.C. started to get gentrified.
Right.
You know, if you look at the early 80s and the late 80s, you know, the real estate boom actually probably started right around there. Mm-hmm. Didn't start with a lot of money, but it started with houses increasing their home values. The D.C. residents and the black residents of D.C. Taking advantage of the increase in prices of their homes, moving to Prince George's County where they could save money but have a little bit better of a quality of life with a larger home, a yard, maybe a fence.
Right.
At that time, you know, a little bit more safety.
Right.
PG County wasn't, it wasn't D.C. at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those African-American families that have been there for the last 20 and 30 years are probably the product of, you know, original Washingtonians. So it's kind of neat to kind of see that story evolve. And I think, you know, for me, it was, you know, that's why I think Howard University can be a great basketball program. You know, as you mentioned all those names and, you know, Quinn Cook, you know, was on that stage last night receiving a, you know, with the championship trophy with the Lakers and
right.
The guy, Duke guy. You know, there's been more Division I players in the Washington, D.C. area. And more NBA players in the last 15 years than any other area in the country. So I think it's something that we really have to take a look at. For me, I understand if that's kind of the facts that we're looking at, that means there's some incredible high school coaching going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's some incredible grassroots coaching going on, and there's guys that are player development guys that are doing a terrific job. So I want to keep our local guys home. When I got the job, Eton, we had one player from the DMV on our team. And over the last year, we were able to bring in 10 guys. So we have a total of 10 guys from the DMV on our team right now.
You know, that's interesting because, and I'll get to that in a little while, but you've coached under some great coaches. And one of the things that, you know, coach from Notre Dame, Coach Brea, he would always talk about the culture of creating a culture of Indiana players. And he wanted to develop that culture. And what you just said about creating that culture from players from the DMV, is that something that you definitely want to do at Howard University?
100%. And that's something I learned from Coach Bray.
Mm.
You know, when I worked with him at the University of Delaware, I was my second year as an assistant full-time coach. Mm. You know, he would talk about developing a culture and going to places like Indiana. Going to places that like North Carolina, going to places like New York or Chicago, where the culture of basketball was created. You don't have to coach effort. You don't have to coach toughness. You don't have right. to, you know, a lot of the things that you may have to coach where areas that don't have as much culture or history or tradition. So knowing that DNA really is important.
Definitely. You know, let's go back a little bit more, because you're a product of DeMatha, a two-sport athlete, played football and basketball, and you actually went there to play football. Tell me about that story.
You've done your homework, huh?
Oh, yeah. That's what we do here on a rematch.
That's awesome. Thank you. There was a gentleman named Mike Anderson, who was a two-sport athlete at DeMatha. He was probably the player of the year in football. Mm-hmm. And was a really good guard on the basketball team for Coach Wooten. Ended up going to the University of Maryland playing football and basketball there. But his dad, rest his soul, Norm Anderson, was a very close friend to a gentleman that ran our recreation center in our area. His name was Fluff Parker.
Okay.
And so Norm would come over during the spring when we had football. Because he loved football. He was a former football player and would observe us playing. And I was a, you know, tall, lanky quarterback that could throw a little bit. Mm. And, you know, he was like, you need to go to DeMatha to play football, not knowing that I even played basketball. Oh, so I actually went to DeMatha to play quarterback. And then when I got there, you know, they had been grooming a young man that had came up through the CYO PG County system.
Okay.
I moved to tailback and wide receiver, but at that point I was like 6'3", 6'4". I was like,
right.
Let me try to concentrate. I kept playing football, but I was like, let me concentrate on basketball a little bit more.
Right. But they didn't discourage. So it's interesting because DeMatha is one of the programs that don't discourage athletes from being two sport athletes. And, you know, that there's been a shift. You know, when I was growing up, half of our basketball team play football. You know what I mean? That's just what it was. But now you're seeing that a little bit different. Where do you stand on two-sport athletes?
I love two-sport athletes, okay. Especially if they're football, basketball athletes, because you know that they have a little bit of toughness with them and they have some competitiveness with them.
Right.
The prime example is Allen Iverson. You know, Bubba Chuck is as tough as they come.
Right.
And he was a high school two-sport athlete and probably could have done it on the collegiate level.
Right, definitely. Now, you went from DeMatha, you went to Duke, played under Coach K. What did you learn your experience at Duke University?
A lot. I learned a lot. It was a, you know, I went there each time because I wanted to win. I came from a culture, I grew up in a culture of winning from Boys and Girls Club, starting at the 10 and under level. All the way up to, you know, being at DeMatha and being part of some championship teams there. So I've always prioritized winning. And I remember my cousin calling me. He was at a junior college.
Mm-hmm.
And Oklahoma wanted to recruit him and me. And he was just like, hey, man, come on down to Oklahoma. It'd be great. And I just remember that conversation very clearly, like it was today. It's just like, dude, I want to go win a national championship. And so, you know, I when I was thinking about, you know, my decision to go to Duke, it was about education because I'm one of the first in my family to get a college degree.
Okay.
And I wanted to prioritize that specifically and make that almost like a legacy with my family. And then the second thing, I wanted to win. So, you know, Coach K is probably one of the most competitive people that you can be around, which I love. I absolutely love it, and intense, you know, and he really, the only thing that he you know, after, you know, mentoring and grooming young men to become men,
mm-hmm.
And become leaders, you know, he wants to win. So it was a great run down there. We had some incredible teammates. I was fortunate enough to play with three guys that were top 50 players in the history of the game, with Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley, and Christian Laettner.
Mm-hmm.
Was part of two national championships,
mm.
And then a third Final Four. So, you know, I wouldn't change my decision for anything.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned that he put an emphasis on grooming young men to become men, and you talked about the, you know, Coach Bray that you know, creating the culture you know, at Howard. You take a little bit of each coach and kind of apply it to your coaching style?
100%. Yeah, I really do. Because for me, you know, being a black man and we're, you know, I'm at a historically black college and university, you know, I want to see our young men be able to go through life and grow. So they are prepared, young men that become men, that become family men. And then they can spend the next 40 to 50 to 60 years of their lives serving, leading, and giving back, and which is really important for me. You know, I've always been a guy that has tried to, you know, do those things and prioritize those things to the best of my ability. And, you know, family and my faith is really important as well. So I'm really big on developing holistically young men so they can be as whole as possible when they leave me and go out into the real world.
And that's really the way that it should be. You know, I don't coach on your level, but I coach my son's AAU team, FBCG Dynamic Disciples. Got the shirt on right here on this side, right here in PG County. And, you know, it's really the way that I was coached growing up, you know, with my AAU team, my coach, Reverend Potter, he taught us about life. Like AAU, the basketball part was important and we got better and everything like that. But it was really to prepare us to be men, especially black men, you know, in this world. And what is it about, you know, your coaching style? Because I've read this about you, and it's one of the things that I admired the most about you. We're in an environment now where at a lot of different PWIs, that just doesn't happen. You know, it just doesn't. You're an employee number three, employee number four. You look to produce, and, you know, if you can graduate, then that's great. But just stay eligible to play. That's really the method. But you take a completely different approach with your players.
Yeah, I before every practice, I read a poem or I read a quote, and that's how we start every practice. I want our guys to have, you know, intellectual thoughts and intellectual conversations, not just off the court, but on the court. And we go through that quote, we go through that poem, and then I ask the guys, what does it mean? And, you know, we live in a culture and society sometimes where young men don't want to speak up.
Right. So
I go around to each one of them and, hey, you know, McCore, what does this mean? You know, Jell, what does this mean? Wayne Briscoe Jr., what does this mean? Steve Sutherland, what does this mean? And I want our guys, I want them to understand and to recognize that they have a voice. And not that there's a right or wrong answer to any of this stuff, but just for them to be comfortable enough to start as a man speaking up and being comfortable with their voice. You know, I just think that it's Eitan, I think that, like, you know, I wanna coach young men how you know, a couple things. I want them to be as whole, and what I mean by whole is, like, I don't want them to be mentally broken when they leave me. I want them to be as strong and as mentally you know, all there, if that makes sense. Yes. When they leave me as when they came, or even stronger. And then I want to treat young men as if, you know, I'm coaching my own kid.
Right.
And that means a whole lot. Do I have to coach guys hard sometimes? Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. But I try to do it in the most respectful way. Mm-hmm. If I ever come across a line, I will apologize and be the first person to apologize. But I want to, you know, I want to coach guys in a way where it's respectful.
And that's, you know, it's interesting that you say that. I was just reading this story about Wichita State head coach Greg Marshall. I don't know if you read this story, but the allegations that are there, and I got to say allegations, but it was corroborated with most of the players, the assistant coaches and everything. But they were really, I mean, racially berating them, Bobby Knight style, just, you know what I mean, tearing them down. You know, I remember at the USA trials, sitting there with Luke Recker and the late Jason Collins and listen to them for an hour and a half just tell Bobby Knight stories. And I'm like, wow, like that's – but that happens a lot more than people think. And I have such a big – that it bothers me. You know, to be quite honest, white coaches abusing black players, yeah, in that way really bothers me. And that's why I can really appreciate a coach like you coming with your mindset and your mind frame of, you know, wanting to, of course, be a disciplinarian, but teaching them, and actually that you care about them. Do you know what I mean? So is that something that, how did you embrace that fully? Like, even going back to Coach Wooden, like how, and Coach Wooden was a white man, but everything that I've heard of him was that type of style. Did you learn of that, light of that from playing under Coach Wooden?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And Coach Wooden and Coach Wooden were very close. And then kind of, you know, going through my journey, playing in different leagues, whatever that may be, I just think that, you know, you hit upon a point, and you know, maybe some people want to hear this, maybe some people don't. Mm-hmm. I just don't think white men should be yelling at black kids.
I agree.
Because we have a history that goes back to some things that are traumatic with that.
Yes.
And I do have an issue with that, to be honest with you.
Agreed.
So I think I take a lot of things in account when I'm trying to mentor and lead young men and help young men grow. There's a great book by Malcolm Gladwell called The Outlier. Mm-hmm. And that book is something that I really use in kind of my research and becoming a coach, and how to nurture young men, nurture people, but also how to help people take steps to become from good to great. So I kind of do my research, and I see things that I like or things that I don't like. But you know, at the end of the day, I want these young men to understand that they don't have to be, they don't have to feel any less of a person to do what somebody is asking them to do.
Right. No, I agree 100%. I mean, and I just, you know, again, I'm coaching younger kids. But I, you know, my son always tells me that, he tells me I'm like Coach Carter without the cursing. You know what I mean? So I'm a disciplinarian. I stay on them. I hold them to a certain, you know, hold them accountable both on and off the floor. You know, it's not like anything can happen off the floor and you'd be okay to play. Like, that's not how we do. No. But then I also care about them. I encourage them. I want to know what's going on in their lives. I could be that father figure that, as we know, a lot of black men need, you know, especially young black men, that they see in their coaches. And, you know, I take them to panel discussions, to debates. We actually had Michael Eric Dyson and Bill Roden. We had a great debate right on Howard University's campus, and a lot of the athletes were there. And it was great to see, and it was great for them to see. But just caring about them more than just what they can do on the basketball court. And that's what I see in you. I read about your Wednesdays. What do you do on Wednesdays? Like,
when we all vote Wednesdays.
When we all vote Wednesdays. Yeah. Tell me about that.
Well, we were the first group to reach out to When We All Vote, which is a nonpartisan voter registration group that is co-chaired by Michelle Obama, Chris Paul, Megan Rapinoe, and others. And what we wanted to do is this is an important period in our country. And as a team, I wanted them, I talk about serving, leading, and giving back. And this is a part of our social and civic responsibility as U.S. citizens to reach out to bring awareness to the election, bring awareness to voting, and try to register young men and women to vote. There's a demographic of between about 18 to about maybe 27, 28 that of black men that don't vote. And our young men have a platform where they have a demographic that is kind of close near that range, that age range, that they can use their social media platform to register people to vote. So that's one of the things that we've done. We have several other initiatives that we've kind of implemented over the last 6 to 7 months with our program.
I think that's great. Okay, and talk about the speaker series that you also have with your players. Yeah. I think all of this is great. So, I mean, I wish this is like the way that each program should be, everything that you have in your program. So I just wanted to, first of all, congratulate you for what you're doing and say much respect. But talk about the speakers bureau that you have.
Well, we were supposed to come to yours, your event when you spoke with Michael Eric Dyson and Mr. Roden, but we were out of town.
You're out of town, right.
We looked at it. The speaker's theory started after something that one of my mentors, Coach Tommy Amaker, has done at Harvard with the Breakfast Club. And what he's done is he's taken the most influential, started with a group of black men and taken the most influential group of black men that that he had in the circle in the Harvard community and that Cambridge and Boston community, and started almost a think tank once a month, that they would get together, have breakfast, and just discuss different topics and different ideas. And I think it was almost like for him, it was a great network of people that he could bounce ideas off that understood the Harvard community that were there and that was that could kind of give him a little bit more knowledge when he first got to Harvard. And we were going to start that in year two. And with COVID and not having our guys on campus and with them having so much ample time, I really felt that we needed to do some things that could engage them, mentally. So we started the speaker series. And what the speaker series is for us is we've gotten, I think we're about 23 to 25 speakers. And since COVID began, and they've been some of the most powerful, business leaders, entrepreneurs, think leaders, people that we've had a chance to engage with and have conversations with about COVID, about the social unrest, about Black Lives Matter, about George Floyd. For our student athletes to have these conversations with people like Xavier Williams, who at the time was at AT&T, just took a job as a CEO of one of the leading cloud companies, computer companies in the country. But Xavier was the highest ranking black at AT&T. To have conversations with him, with Hugh Gaskins, who's one of the most sought after thought leaders in marketing, to have Grant Hill, to have Bill Roden, to have so many people that we've had a chance to come and be a part of our speaker series. And for our players, not only to exchange thoughts, but also pick up mentors. Mm-hmm. Paxton Baker, one of the minority owners of the Washington Nationals. All of these guys and women that have been a part of this have given their emails, their cell phone numbers, and said stay in contact. So for our guys, that's been huge.
I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. So let's switch gears a little bit, and I want to talk about the recruiting process now. And there's a wave of top five-star recruits, four-star recruits now looking to Howard University, now looking to HBCUs as a whole. You all, of course, got Maker. There's other recruits that I know you can't talk about now because of recruiting violations. I know about the violations. But just talk about this wave of new interest now from the top players in coming to HBCUs as a whole.
Yeah, I think it's, we were recruiting two five-star kids at the beginning of last year when I got the job. Those relationships were things that we had already established and we were moving forward with. We had two of those young men. One was the core maker who ended up with us at Howard, and the other gentleman was Josh Christopher that ended up at Arizona State. Mm-hmm. For me, in recruiting, it's about relationships. It's about fit and feel. It's about knowing, getting to know that young man and having that young man get to know you. There's a lot of guys that want us to recruit them or offer them just so they can say that they have a Howard or an HBCU offer.
Oh.
We've actually pulled back, to be honest with you. Okay. And we're trying to be more selective because we don't want young men to use this platform and this opportunity as an opportunity for them to increase their social media numbers or, to act like it. We take it very seriously.
Gotcha.
We have some incredible history and tradition with our university. We're one of the top 80 universities in the country. Mm-hmm. We have Senator Harris, who's running for vice president on the Joe Biden ticket.
Right.
So I wanna protect that as much as possible.
Okay.
And, with some of these guys that we're recruiting, some do have some sincere interest.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some guys that have reached out to us that are five-star guys, that are top 10 guys that, want to know more about our university and would love for us to present our university to them and see if it's something that may be a fit for them. But, you know, in terms of guys that may just want to have an HBCU offer, you know, we're not in the business for that. At least at Howard, we're not.
So what are the things that are different when you go? Because, you know, I remember being recruited and, you know, you have the different schools come to your house, and a lot of times they make promises that for me and my mother, you know, my mother turned us off immediately. Certain promises, because that's not what we were interested in. And, you know, then others have, you know, of course, they tout the exposure and they tout the facilities and things of that nature. And those are two items that have constantly come up with players as their hesitancy of going towards HBCUs, exposure and facilities. How do you see that changing?
Well, I mean, for us, we entertain that conversation because, yeah, that the arms race, as we call it, is real. But what we really like to present to families and student athletes is that, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, running for vice president, Thurgood Marshall, the first Black Supreme Court justice, Andrew Young, the first U.S. ambassador, David Dinkins, the first Black mayor of New York. Governor Wilder, the first Black governor of Virginia, you know, Elijah Cummings, the first speaker pro tempo. Like, those are the things. Marianne Shad Carey, the first Black to cast a vote in any major election. Those are the things that we like to present to student athletes. You know, the stuff with facilities and things like that, we get it. We understand it. You know, we're working right now on a new practice gym, which will be ready in August of 21. Our basketball offices will get renovated. They'll be ready August of 21, and our locker rooms. So we understand that young men want to have some of those things, and they don't want to compromise or take a discount on some of the, I guess, the ancillary things that other universities may have. At the end of the day, we're presenting our history, our tradition, our culture to student athletes and our staff, that they'll get our, you know, our full mind, body, and soul to help them become better people and better basketball players.
What can you tell them about exposure? You know, as I hear that come up, and I like, take somebody like Zion. I think that wherever he went, that's where the attention would go. Like, he could have been playing in his backyard, and you know what I mean? That's where it would have gone. But for other players, the exposure is a concern. But I guess the more you win, the more productive you are, the more exposure you get. I always use the example of the year before the Fab Five went to Michigan. They weren't on TV much. That's just they talk about it in the book. And then afterwards, when they got there and they achieved all this success, then you saw a whole lot more TV games. And that's just how it happens. Is that pretty accurate?
No, that's completely accurate. And just to, you know, I'll take McCormaker, for instance. Since he committed to us on July 3rd, he's gotten over 1 billion, with a B, 1 billion social media impressions.
Oh, wow.
Which equates to about $4.5 million in marketing exposure for him. His draft status has gone up from him being a, you know, mid to second round or not getting drafted, to now being one of the top probably 15 draft picks without even playing a game.
Wow.
You know, so it's we talk about branding, we talk about marketing, we talk about separating and you know, a lot in our presentations with our student athletes. And with him, you know, understanding our brand as a university of Howard, with him understanding our history and culture and tradition, and also trusting the fact that the things that we were presenting to him were true and accurate. His story has not been just a sports story. If you look at any of the social media stuff, when young men maybe go to a Power Five school and they commit, their stories may be like a 12 to 24 hour kind of story on social media.
Right.
Four Makers has been going rampant since July 3rd.
Right.
And it's going to continue to go that way. He's been interviewed by CNN, Good Morning America, The Today Show, Wall Street Journal, New York Times. We're not even talking about, you know, sports publications right now.
Mm-hmm.
So his story has been a news story. which transcends him in a way that other athletes aren't being, you know, thought about or, you know, positioned, to be honest with you.
That's great. Now, where do you want to take the program as a whole? You know, we talk about playing outside of conference. I was reading where I think Notre Dame was going to play or, you know, scheduled to play. I think this was pre-COVID. You know, of course, COVID changes everything. But where do you want to take the program as a whole?
Yeah, the Notre Dame game is still on. Okay. It's going to be on Martin Luther King Day. I think it's 1/18. And 2 days before the inauguration. So D.C. is going to be incredible. And it'll be at, yeah, it'll be at Burr on campus. And just real quick, Eitan, I think it's really important for PWIs and these Power Five schools to play HBCUs and come on campuses. Because, you know, those teams comprise of 60 to 70% of African-American student athletes. A lot of them have never been on an HBCU campus. A lot of them don't know the history and tradition and the culture of HBCU. So to bring Mike Gray, understanding that, knowing that, wanting to bring his team here to give them some life and educational lessons, kudos to him. Just in terms of taking the program, you know, I think we can be a program and with our brand that can be like a Gonzaga, that can be like a Butler before they were in the Big East. They were in the Horizon League and went to two Final Fours. We can be a St. Mary's. We can be a San Diego State, which means that we can be a mid-major team that is playing at a high major level and recruiting high major kids. You know, but we want to, like I said, identify the right kids to be in our program. So that's what I think the future of Howard basketball could be. And that's where, you know, my mindset is. And I hope we're working towards doing that.
And just to be all the way clear, because a lot of high school players are gonna see this interview, especially here in the DMV, lay out the you know, the format of exactly what the right kid is that you would be interested to play for Howard University.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, it's for me, we were going through last year, which we were 4-29 in our first year. When I got the job, we had 50 points from the program either graduate or transfer before I got hired. I was the second to last hire in the country last year. And my staff would joke with me because we would get to the 16-minute timeout in the first half and I would start talking about recruiting. And that I talked about, in recruiting is that we need a character and that we need a toughness and we need a basketball IQ. So those three things for me are things that are kind of like very important. Obviously, you know, we Howard being a top 80 school, we're very selective with the students that we bring in. You know, we are a school of about 10,000, about 6,200 or 6,400 in undergrad, and the rest is in grad school and med school. So we want our students to understand, I think, what Howard is about and before they get here. And it's about Black excellence. It's about high achievement. It's about our students walk on this campus and they want to be great. They're trying to be the next, you know, Elijah Cummings or the next Andrew Young or the next, you know, Puff Daddy or the next Chadwick Boseman. You know, that's mentality of a student that's on this campus. And we talk about with our student athletes that, you know, the greatest chance to change the world is between Howard University and U.S. Congress. We have more alums on U.S. on Capitol Hill than any other school in the country. And we want our student athletes, at least our basketball players, to want to have a voice, to want to be a person of changing things, to want to have an impact on society, not only locally, but if they can do it globally. McCore Maker, just for an instance, you know, has been invited to sit in on, you know, the National Resilience and Heat Alliance. He's interested in reusable energy for his country back home and wants to learn more. So, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation reached out and was very interested in hearing his story and invited him to sit in on some Zoom calls so he can get, you know, more information and more education on those kind of things. So that's what that's what Howard brings to our students. And not only, you know, our students, but if they're serious as student athletes about those areas, we can position our student athletes with the right mentors, in the right conversations, in the right rooms, to be able to go out and have a greater impact than just being a student athlete.
That's great, Coach. That's great. Well, you know, much respect to everything that you're doing there. I wish you nothing but success. And again, I really mean it. The values that you're instilling in players and your entire coaching philosophy is something that I wish a lot more coaches would have. Howard is very lucky and blessed to be able to have you there as a coach, you know, instilling these principles in players. Because like I said, it's not done everywhere. You know what I mean? Everywhere is treated like you're player number three, player number four, and then that's it. So I really appreciate that. So much respect to everything that you're doing. Stay safe. And thanks for coming on the Rematch.
Thank you, Eton. I appreciate it, man. I've always been a big fan of yours, even when you're at the Cuse, and to see the things that you're doing now, man, giving back and, you know, speaking up for justice and equality and our people is amazing. So thank you so much.
All right. I appreciate that. All right. Bless and stay safe.
Yes, sir. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Rematch. You can find more episodes on basketballnews.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review. You can also find my articles on basketballnews.com, along with exclusive content from Kenyon Martin, Vinny Del Negro, James Posey, and more. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at EtonThomas36. Let me know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see as a guest. I would love your feedback.